And now, the man in black takes from his files another case history of an attempt to commit the perfect crime.
Good evening. This is the man in black. A year ago tonight, an innocent man was murdered in a small New England village. He was murdered by Clyde Ross. Listen to what happened in Clyde's own words before he was executed. As I walked across the village square toward the church, I knew I was going to murder old man Hansen, the good sexton, the church bell ringer. Oh, it was going to be so simple and easy. A couple of things left to do first, and that was all. One was to see Father Vincent and tell him how worried I was about Hansen. That he was too old to be climbing the tower to ring the bell. That he'd slip someday and have a bad fall down the stairs. That he might even fall out of the belfry. I knew how Father Vincent would react. And he did, just as I expected. I even remember how he said it.
Why, we cannot retire the old man as sexton, my son. Why, next to you, this is his whole life.
And I remember how I told him that, sure, he was so right. But that I loved Hansen like a father and worried about him. Well, I left it at that and went to walk the old sexton home. I lived with him, you see, but he wasn't my father. Oh, no, he was just an old goof whose wife had died 5 years ago and he'd taken me in off the streets. Frankly, I hated the sight of him. But the old man was loaded. He'd saved all kinds of money and no one to leave it to. So I buttered him up for a year or so and got it all fixed legally. I inherited his money when the old man croaked. Yeah. I was going to fix that, too. All I needed was a good simple plan and a witness to say I was somewhere else when it happened. All was easy. First, old Hansen was going to fall out of the church belfry and kill himself. He was going to fall out. Yeah, because I was going to push him. Second, Henry Freckleton was going to be the witness to say I was somewhere else. Henry has a hamburger stand at the edge of town, and for months in advance, at the same time, every Thursday evening, I'd drive past Henry's and honk and wave at him. He knew I was on my way to Bedford. That's a town about 10 miles away to see a movie. So every Thursday, Henry'd wave me out of town, and a couple hours later, he'd wave me back. So it was established where I went every Thursday night. Clever? But one night, the big night, I didn't go to Bedford. I drove past Henry's, all right, but then I circled back on a little wagon road that led to the woods right behind the church. I hid my car there, and in a few minutes I was silently climbing the narrow steps to the belfry. Old Hansen just begun to pull the bell when he saw me, and he smiled at me. I smiled back happily, waited till he pulled the bell for the last time, and then I jumped him quick and pushed him over. Just a little push. He fell without a cry. And it seemed right somehow that he landed in the cemetery at the side of the church. Afterwards, I never heard it so quiet. All the way back through the woods to the car, it was as quiet as death. And then I was right on time for Henry's wave when I drove back into town. I knew then the circle was complete. The crime was perfect.
Clyde Ross finished his story and said no more. The end is well known. 2 short days later, Clyde was arrested for the murder of the old sexton. Where had he made his mistake? By telling Father Vincent of his concern for the sexton's safety. Because he'd been so convincing, the good father took the problem to the sexton himself. And old Hansen, touched by Clyde's obvious love for him, devised a signal to assure Father Vincent that all was well. He simply rang the church bell 4 extra times to signify that he was not in danger, that Clyde was there. The Man in Black has brought you from his files another case history of an attempt to commit the perfect crime. This is the CBS Radio Network. And now, The Man in Black takes from his files another case history of an attempt to commit the perfect crime. As he walked across the village square toward the church, Clyde Ross knew he was going to kill old man Hansen, the good sexton, the church bell ringer. Oh, it was going to be so simple and easy, he thought. There were only a couple of things left to do. The first was to see Father Vincent, to tell him how worried he was about old man Hansen, to tell him that Hansen was too old to be climbing the tower to ring the bell, that he'd slip someday and have a bad fall down the stairs, that he might even fall out of the belfry. Clyde knew how Father Vincent would react to this, and sure enough he did. "We cannot retire the old man as sexton, my son. Why, next to you, this is his whole life." Clyde knew that would be the answer and told Father Vincent that he was right. And he carefully added that he loved the old sexton like a father. Although, in fact, of course, Clyde hated him, and Hansen was not his father, but just a lonely old man whose wife had died 5 years ago and who had given Clyde a home. Long since, however, Clyde had discovered that old Hansen had saved his money for years and now had an impressive sum to will to someone. Without much difficulty, Clyde wormed his way into the old man's heart, and now it was all legally arranged that he was going to inherit the money when old Hansen died. But Clyde was impatient, and one day he decided upon a faster way to get the money. All he needed was a good, simple plan, and a witness to say that he was somewhere else when the old man died. He found both easily. First, he decided that old Hansen would fall out of the church belfry and kill himself. And then, to prove that he could not possibly have been present, Clyde settled upon Henry Freckleton as his witness, that he was elsewhere when it happened. Henry had a hamburger stand at the edge of town, and for months in advance, at the same time, every Thursday night, Clyde would drive past Henry's and honk and wave at him. He let Henry know that he went every Thursday to Bedford, about 10 miles away, to a movie. And on Clyde's return, Henry would wave him back into town. And so it was established where he went each Thursday. But one night, the big night, Clyde didn't go to Bedford. He drove past Henry's all right, but then he circled back on a little wagon road that led to the woods right behind the church. He hid his car there, and a few minutes later he was silently climbing the narrow steps to the belfry. Old Hansen had just begun to pull the bell when he saw Clyde, and he smiled at him. Clyde smiled back and waited until the sexton had pulled the bell for the last time. Then Clyde picked him up gently and threw him over. The old man fell without a cry, landed in the cemetery at the side of the church, and died instantly. Nobody had heard or seen the accident. Clyde took one brief look below and then hurried back through the woods to his car. Shortly afterwards, Henry Freckleton waved him back into town. The circle was complete. The crime was perfect. And yet, 2 days later, Clyde was arrested for murder. Where had he made his mistake? By telling Father Vincent of his concern for the sexton's safety. Because he'd been so convincing, the good father took the problem to the sexton himself. And old Hansen, touched by Clyde's obvious love for him, devised a signal to assure Father Vincent that all was well. He simply rang the church bell 4 extra times to signify that he was not in danger, that Clyde was there.
The Man in Black has brought you from his files another case history of an attempt to commit the perfect crime. This is the CBS Radio Network. Within the next few minutes, a major crime will be committed somewhere in the United States. Before this program is off the air, a criminal will have struck and vanished, having accomplished a perfect crime. But is it? From his files, The Man in Black brings you another story of a crime that was almost perfect, of a criminal who made only one mistake.
Good evening. This is The Man in Black.
A year ago tonight, an innocent man was murdered in a small New England village. He was murdered by Clyde Ross. Listen to what happened in Clyde's own words as he told it to me just before he was executed.
I was going to murder a man, and the whole idea of it felt good. Right then, as I walked across the village square toward the church, I knew I was going to murder him. It was going to be so easy, simple and easy. A couple of little things left to do, and that was all. Then the church bell started ringing. I looked up at the steeple. Even at night, you could see the belfry clear enough. I could even see the bell banging first one way, then the other. The only thing I couldn't see was him, Edgar Branson. He was the sexton. Big deal. Dig a few graves, keep the old church cemetery looking homey, and ring the bell. That was old man Branson. That was his whole life. That was the guy I was going to kill. Not tonight. Later. A week or so, maybe. I went inside the church, through the vestibule, down the long, dark hall that led to Father Vincent's quarters. When Father Vincent answered my knock, I looked worried. That was part of my plan. Right away, he wanted to know what was wrong, so I told him. I was worried about old Branson. He was too old to be climbing the tower, that maybe he'd slip someday and have a bad fall down the stairs, that he might even fall out of the belfry. Oh, I played it big, like a son being worried about his father. And Father Vincent went right along with it, as I knew he would. I remember just how he said it. We cannot retire old Edgar as sexton, my son. Next to you, this is his whole life. To take it from him now, to say to him his usefulness is gone, would be a grievous wrong, my son. Perhaps a fatal wrong. Yeah, sure. Sure, I told Father Vincent. Sure, he was so right. Boy, both of us were pretty choked up by the time I left. I walked old man Branson home. You see, I live with him. Why not? I wasn't blessed with a family. Besides, old man Branson was loaded, saved all kinds of money, and no one to leave it to. His wife had died 5 years ago. After a year or so of me buttering the old boy up, it was all fixed legally. I'd inherit the whole load when the sexton croaked. Let me tell you, I earned it. Brother, how I earned it. Playing nursemaid to an old goof you can't stand the sight of. All the time, acting like he's doing you a big favor, taking you off the streets. You think that's easy? And what's worse, I'd given him something to live for. Everyone said so. Something to live for. Great. And all I ever wanted was to give him something to die for. Old goof. Well, once I knew I was going to kill him, the pressure was off. All I needed was a good plan. A simple one, you know. And a Class A bona fide witness that said I was somewhere else when it happened. A simple plan. Old Branson was going to fall out of the church belfry. He was going to fall out. Yeah. Because I was going to push him. You see, I started the pattern a few months ahead of time. Every Thursday night, I'd drive to Bedford, about 10 miles away, to go to a movie. Got so I was driving past Henry Freckleton's hamburger stand at the edge of town at the same time every Thursday night. Henry'd wave me out of town, and a couple of hours later, I'd honk, and he'd wave me back into town. Henry, Father Vincent, and old man Branson, they all knew where I went every Thursday night. Except that once or twice, I didn't go to Bedford at all. Oh, I drove past Henry's, all right. A few miles out on the Bedford Road, then I'd circle back on a dinky little wagon road that led to the woods behind the church. I found out I could hide my car there and enter the church belfry unnoticed. After a while, it would be simple to complete the circle and pass Henry's again as I came back into town. Yeah, and it worked, too, like a charm. Not a hitch anywhere. Henry waves me out of town on schedule. I didn't even pass a car on the old wagon road, and the woods were as quiet as a tomb when I went through them. I was silently climbing the narrow, twisting steps to the belfry. Old Branson had just begun to pull the bell when he saw me, and he smiled at me like I was his son. I smiled back. When he pulled the bell for the last time, I moved on him quick and threw him over the side. Fell to his death without a word. It seemed right somehow that he pitched right into the cemetery at the side of the church. Afterwards, I never heard it so quiet. All the way back through the woods to the car, it was as quiet as death. And I was right on time for Henry's wave when I drove back into town, too. I knew then the circle was complete. The crime was perfect.
Clyde Ross finished his story and said no more. The end is well known. 2 short days later, Clyde was arrested for the murder of the old sexton. Where had he made his mistake? What thin web of circumstance became the cord about his neck? As in the case of most perfect crimes, Clyde turned out to be his own hangman. If he had not told Father Vincent of his concern for the sexton's safety, he might well have lived to inherit the old man's wealth. But because he told his story so convincingly, the good father took the problem to the sexton himself. And old Brandon, touched by Clyde's obvious love for him, devised a signal to assure Father Vincent that all was well. He rang the church bell 4 extra times to signify that he was not in danger, that Clyde was there.
The Man in Black has brought you from his files another case history of a criminal who attempted to commit the perfect crime. This is the CBS Radio Network. Within the next few minutes, a major crime will be committed somewhere in the United States. Before this program is off the air, a criminal will have struck and vanished, having accomplished a perfect crime. But is it? From his files, The Man in Black brings you another story of a crime that was almost perfect, of a criminal who made only one mistake. And now, The Man in Black.
The young man's footsteps echoed hollowly across the cobblestones of the deserted village square. His pace was regular, brisk, until he reached the steps of the church, and there he paused. And for a long moment, the half-light of a nearby street lamp caught the sensitive features of his young face as he narrowed his eyes and peered intently up toward the bell tower. Slowly, then, the church bell began to peal, and the young man smiled. He could see the bell, but nothing else. Apparently satisfied, he hurried up the church steps, in through the vestibule and back to Father Vincent's quarters. Somewhere along the way, the smile left his face and was replaced by an expression of grave concern. It was this expression that greeted Father Vincent as he admitted the young man to his rooms. "Clyde, my son, what is wrong? You're troubled. Are you ill?" Clyde managed a weak smile. "I'm not ill, Father. Troubled, yes." His eyes indicated the bell tower. It's he, old Branson, who troubles me." Father Vincent evidenced concern. "The sexton? But why, Clyde?" "Why, Branson and I had a long talk this evening. His health is good, exceptionally good. And his faith, his spirits are in excellent order." And here the priest smiled. "Thanks to you, my son. You bring him such happiness." There was protest in Clyde's reply. "Please, Father, listen to me. He'll be down soon. I have to meet him to walk him home. There's not much time to talk. Now, perhaps I'm wrong, but I worry about him climbing to the tower. When I don't worry about him, I fear that he may fall from the tower itself. His health is good, yes, but he's an old man, Father. His step's not as sure as it was. You understand. I felt I had to tell you." A great warmth and admiration reflected in Father Vincent's eyes. "You would have him retire as sexton of our church, son? Why, next to you, this is his whole life. It gave him a usefulness his nature demanded when he felt there was nothing else to live for. Why, to take it away from him now, to say to him his usefulness is gone, would do a grievous wrong, Clyde. Perhaps a fatal wrong." Later that night, long after old Branson was asleep, Clyde smiled to himself in the darkness of his own room. Father Vincent had reacted just as Clyde knew he would. To relieve Branson of his duties as sexton might indeed prove fatal. Father Vincent and Clyde both realized that. What the good priest did not realize was that keeping the self-same job would also prove fatal for old Branson. The sexton would fall from the bell tower to his death. And Clyde? Clyde would be miles from the scene of the accident at the time. Or so it would appear. Clyde let a week pass, then two. And finally he settled on the night itself. He planned it, just as carefully planned every step of his way into the old sexton's heart. 5 years before, Branson's wife and only son had died tragically in an accident, and Clyde had appeared, out of orphan poverty, to take their place, and with very good reason. Old Branson was a man of means in the village. It was widely known now that when the old man died, it was Clyde who would inherit his wealth. But 5 years was a long time, and Clyde waited impatiently for the old man to die. Finally convinced that it was he and the job as sexton that actually kept Branson alive, Clyde settled on a course of murder. In recent months, he had formed the habit of visiting a neighboring community on a certain night each week. On his way out of town, he would wave at Henry at the hamburger stand. Later, as he returned, he would wave at Henry again. Henry would make a fine witness when the time came. Further, Clyde had a carefully contrived short cut. He could drive past Henry if... Oh, nuts. Can you take that? Can we take it over again?
Just pick it up. Go back about a sentence behind it, Paul.
Can you cut it out? Later, as he returned, he would wave at Henry again. Henry would make a fine witness when the time came. Further, Clyde had carefully contrived a shortcut. He could drive past Henry a few miles, circle back.
Can we cut it and go again? Oh, this is murder.
Go back and pick it up in the same place again, Paul.
Later, as he returned, he would wave at Henry again. Henry would make a fine witness when the time came. Further, Clyde had carefully contrived a shortcut. He could drive past Henry a few miles, circle back on a less traveled path, seclude his car in the woods behind the church. It was always possible to enter the bell tower unnoticed, and Clyde had proved to himself that no one was visible to the street from the tower. Once he had pushed old Branson from the tower, it would become a simple matter to complete his circle tour and again pass Henry as he entered the village. The night was at hand. With apparent ease, Clyde repeated his well-rehearsed plan. Henry was at his post to wave a greeting. No one else traveled the back road that night, and all was serene as Clyde made his way through the woods, then silently up the narrow twisting steps to the bell tower. Old Branson had just begun to pull the bell when he saw Clyde and smiled, for Clyde was like his son. Clyde smiled too. And when the old sexton pulled the bell for the last time, Clyde moved quite quickly and surely. The old man fell to certain death without a word. Fittingly enough, he fell noiselessly into the cemetery to the side of the church. Clyde took one brief look below and then made his way as silently as the old man had fallen, back through the woods to his car. Half an hour later, he was entering the village again. Sure enough, Henry looked up from his duties to wave again at Clyde. The circle was complete. The crime was perfect. And yet, 2 short days later, Clyde Ross was arrested for the murder of the old sexton. Where had he made his mistake? What thin web of circumstance became the cord about his neck? As in the case of most perfect crimes, Clyde turned out to be his own hangman. If he had not told Father Vincent of his concern for the sexton's safety, he might well have lived to inherit the old man's wealth. But because he told his story so convincingly, the good father took the problem to the sexton himself. And old Branson, touched by Clyde's obvious love for him, devised a signal for Father Vincent to assure him that all was well. He rang the church bell 4 extra times to signify that he was not in danger, that Clyde was there.
The Man in Black has brought you from his files another case history of a criminal who attempted to commit the perfect crime. This is the CBS Radio Network.